Ron Brand speaking with Wallace Carey on March 16th, 2005, and we're going to go over the history of logging, as far as Wallace knows, in Union County. Wallace, before you described yourself as a horse logger, one of the old-time logging in this area. Can you tell me about how that worked?
Well, of course, the horse logging, along with the cat logging, we did the horse logging on the steeper ground where we had skid trails. We'd swamp out and skid the logs to the skid trails, and we'd, it was a long haul on steep ground, we had trail dogs that we would hook the logs together, and so we could drive them in the each end of the logs and continue on back. We could bring five or six logs down the steep country with the trail dogs instead of just one log.
A trail dog is
a chain, few links of chains, and then they got the dog on each end that you pound in the tail end of one log and the front end of the other one, and they would.
Okay, so they'd be strung in a row.
Yeah, it'd be, you bring down four or five logs at a time instead of just one, you see, with the trail dogs. That was in the steep ground, you know. Of course, it wasn't a matter of power, it was position, and you had to keep from, you had to protect your team from real steep ground, from the logs were running on you, you know. You had to be prepared for that.
Were you ever involved in incidents where people were hurt doing this kind of logging?
We never did hurt a person, but no doubt it was happened. You know, that was in the days when the timber was, even then, was not thick enough for high lead logging or anything. You were just kind of picking up the bunches of timber that was left because it was too thin for the high lead loggers. So we picked up the remnants of the originals left because it wasn't enough growth of timber to justify the big rigs to.
So the bigger timber had already been taken out?
Yeah.
Did your group take that out, or was that someone else?
Well, both, really. But in my dime, in the bigger bunches of timber was taken out with railroad, and you would skid the logs to the rail and then load out on the railroad cars. That was in the better ground, but the canyon logging like we did over on the Minum, it wasn't thick enough timber for for the big production, so it was just horse loaded into the bottom and then loaded on trucks and hauled out of there. There wasn't any railroads in that country.
Okay. There were railroads up in some of the country around here, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, out in the Grossman country, even on the Looking Glass, even Palmer Valley out here. That was way back. Palmers was in Wallowa, and then it eventually was bought out by Bowman Hicks, and that actually this Palmer Valley out here, those logs went to Wallowa way back early days.
Okay. It wasn't part of Wallowa County though. The logs from there went to the Wallowa mill.
That was in the Wallowa mill, yeah, in Wallowa County, and this was Union County out here.
Mm-hmm.
Looking around.
Okay, how many men would be involved in a job at any one time if for pulling out the smaller logs?
Oh, just about three men, the log cutter, and brushy country. So generally, the teamster had a swamper. They called him. You know, he would swamp out the trails for the horses to get in to get the logs, and then the teamster with his team, either trail dog them together, or if it was bigger stuff, I swamp it out and pull them out through the main skid trail, and then dog them together, and then go down to the landing with them and get four or five logs at a time that way.
And these would be pulled with what, choke chains? They, at least one would be attached to the horses, or
well,
the horses rigged by with choke chains?
Well, normally we just use tongs. You know what tongs are.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it take a lot of time to put a chain around a log, you know. You had to dig under the log to get it on, but when you had just pair of tongs where you just grip on the sides, you know, and pull them out.
Oh, okay. And by pulling on the tong, it forces it closed?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long did they still use those that you know of?
Not. It's completely changed over the years. Everything is high lead or you know, even chopper. You're even getting the bad cannons and use helicopters in places that would be too steep for anything except the helicopters, you know.
Okay. But you would work some fairly steep valleys.
Oh, yeah.
Up in Palmer Junction.
We was out here on the Minum.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we were. Well, we were later, but of course that was a lot better ground except in the canyons. Out towards Troy, out this way. But that ground was, could be mostly logged with cats then. And that was probably when the cats come in, that was probably the more or less the elimination of the horse logging, really. Except in certain canyons, it was kind of sparsely growth of timber where you could get them with a team, and it wouldn't pay to build a road in to get them out with cats.
And the steep areas weren't, the cats couldn't get into the steep areas,
well,
is that
not,
right?
Well, not the real steep, no. No, it was, you had to build a road to them with the cats if you did, and a lot of places you wouldn't have enough timber to justify it, so that's when the horse lover picked up the tailings of it all.
Now, you worked with your own company at one time, didn't you?
Yeah. My brother and I were partners, and I run the team, and he run the cats.
This was horse logging, you did?
Yeah.
Is it the same distinction where you went into steeper areas or more sparse?
Oh, yeah.
With the horse teams?
With the horses, yeah. Because it just didn't justify building roads and so on to get what timber was there. So that's when the horse lover come in. Get the job done without building roads and so on, you know. And a lot of it was too steep for cats even.
How long would you'd go out with a team of maybe 2-3 guys?
Well, just one.
Just one?
I was a teamster, and my helper was the swamper, and that was it. And a lot of times we just bunch for the on the sparse timber. We would more or less just group for the cataloging, and you had every kind of a combination. You know, there was ground that the cats couldn't get on. That's where the horse lover come in. Even rolling chances on, if there was a draw full of timber and then an open hillside, you'd skid out to the bare ground, and then you'd turn them loose and roll, let them roll.
Oh, okay.
They'd really put on a show sometime. They go like a 30-inch log and so on, turn it loose down there, and then get turning end over end and run into other trees and smash them down. And it was quite a show sometimes.
How much timber would you wreck?
Oh, very little, really. But the small growth, you know, you didn't pay any attention to it those days. You hated that because you had to swamp out so the team could get in, you know, if it wasn't big enough to merciful timber, well, it was just in your way, you know.
Now, whose land was this you were working?
It was, a lot of it was private owned.
Okay.
It would be actually, like on the mine, and that was owned by a cattleman for the range that, but in the draws where the timber grew, of course, that was no good for pasture, and so then that's where the logger come in to get it cleared out to where it would raise some grass.
Okay. Was any of the land owned by National Forest Service or State Forest?
Well,
or big companies like Boise or Weyerhaeuser?
Well, I suppose every combination could be mentioned. You know, we logged on. Part of that mine was owned by cattlemen. They wanted the timber out of it. And, of course, the males wanted the timber, but it would actually help the cattlemen by getting the get into those dense draws and so on and get it opened up so the grass can grow. So in the meantime, you harvest some timber for doing that.
So they would gain both in pasture and financially from the price of the logs. Did you generally do clear cutting way back? Or who selected the logs to cut?
Just if they're big enough to go, I cut them down. Actually, there was you did it. You logged by the scale, you know, board feet scale. Well, you didn't monkey with the little stuff that they got nowadays. You know, there was, you know, like a 16-inch log diameter had 160 board feet in it, 16 feet long. Well, in those days, you didn't want to mess around with 160 board feet. You'd rather get a 32-inch butt cut log that's got 1,030 feet in it when it's 36 inches in diameter. See, so you took the best, just like the steel do, I suppose. But the clear cuts, of course, they take a lot of awful little stuff now, and they utilize it, you know. Probably some of the decks over here at the mill, you just can't believe that they can get anything out of those little things, but they do, you know, and they, which is good that they can use it. That, a lot of that stuff we just run over with cats to get the bigger stuff in those days.
What did you do with the other, like, smaller trees that had been knocked over and all the slash? What did you do with that?
Just left them.
Left them in place? You didn't make slash piles?
No. You didn't those days.
So you went in, you took the best logs, the biggest logs. Did you hunt for different kinds of trees?
Well, yeah. In those days, white pine was supreme. And white fir, which they really like now, you just run over white fir or around it. Just leave the white fir alone. The only time that we ever harvested white fir was when they air dried the big lumber piles. You know, they pile lumber 16 foot square and up probably 20 feet high, and they air dried it. There was no such thing as the kiln dried, so on. You just make those big lumber piles and air dried them, and the only thing they used white fir for was to cover the lumber piles, because it was the only species that didn't warp. They finally learned that white fir doesn't warp. And now you see more white fir than you see anything else.
Partially for the same reason.
Well, white fir had a lot of qualities. It didn't warp. Tamarack or pine or anything, it would dry, it would just be like a corkscrew, some of it, you know. But white fir never was. That's why they liked it to cover the lumber piles. But that's all they used it for. Now they use more white fir than anything else. They finally learned that, well, it was a product that was just left, and now they're utilizing it.
When did you first start logging like this? About when? Do you remember the year?
When I first started cutting logs with my dad,
mm-hmm.
15 years old. That was in 1936.
Okay. What kind of equipment did you use? All the different kinds. Since you were a horse logger, what kind of equipment did you need to get your horses out, to bring the logs in?
Just a chain and, of course, your double trees and your harness. But the equipment used for logging was either tongs or a chain. That's all.
And those dog tails.
Mm-hmm.
Those dog tails?
Well, yeah, those trail dogs.
Trail dogs.
But that was only used on the steep ground where you can pull several logs because you were going downhill, you know, so you could bunch them up and take a pretty good drag with just one team, you know. But on good ground where you just pull one log, of course, to the landing or the rail siding or whatever.
Now, would you go out and just stay out on a job until you finished?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we stayed in tents.
What kind of equipment did you have for cooking, taking care of everything like that?
Just camp stoves. You know, that flat top, that's where you did your cooking. And just those... Oh, what they call them? Thin. You just call them camp stoves now, but that's all we had those days. It wasn't anything heavy, but you didn't want anything heavy. You know, you wouldn't pack a thing like that around for your camps.
Were these like cast iron?
No, they were just sheet metal.
Sheet metal.
Yeah.
Okay.
They'd burn out pretty often, you know.
Did you have any help from people's wives bringing things out for them or stuff like that?
Oh, you had every combination in the world, you know. But we, my dad and brother, we just camped out. We was our own cooks, and my dad was the salt miler. Didn't take much equipment those days. And if you can imagine the price, we got 75 cents a thousand for cutting logs.
For 1,000 board feet, you got 75 cents. I mean, the logging company who did it.
Yeah, that was our price for cutting logs.
And if you had three men doing that, you'd get 25 cents each.
Yeah. But of course, a pair of overalls cost you 79 cents, too,
you know.
So it all...
A different scale.
Relative, I guess.
Yeah. Could a logger live fairly decently at that time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was just like farming. Everything was cheap, but nothing cost you much, you know. You know, you buy a new crosscut saw like that up there on the wall for $8, $9.
Okay, now you were using crosscut saws to fell the trees.
Oh, yeah, and cut them up.
And is that about the size?
Yeah.
That's what, about six, 5 feet?
No, six.
6 feet.
It's either six or six and a half. Normally, unless you got into big timber, they were mostly always 6 foot. And my dad was a saw filer. And a good one.
So you had to sharpen your own equipment?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you did it by hand.
On the job?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Dad would file the saws while his kids got supper.
How many good size, say 36 inch logs, could you cut with a saw like that before you had to sharpen it again?
Well, you filed a saw every night, and you took care of it during the day.
Okay.
But of course, it'd be dull. Of course, you kept it out of the rocks and so on, you know. But of course, the points would dull over the day's cut, so you file the saw every night.
Okay, Did you ever use chainsaws in your life?
Oh, yeah, later years, yeah.
About when, do you remember about when that started?
I remember in 1945 we cut a 12 horse distant. Boy, you would even. You would even pack one of them now. I think that that distant weighed 79 pounds on the business end of it. Of course, it was a two-man saw then.
A two-man power saw.
Yeah, but they were big. You had three different choices as competition changed, you know, but the 12-horse distant, the 8-horse McCully, or not McCully, 5-horse McCully, that was the new modern one. And then there was that opposed cylinder Titan. Yeah, the Distant and the Titan were the first big saws, power saws to come out. Then the later the Maul come out, and they about had a runaway with that because it was so much lighter. But they were, everything had their own problems. Those Mauls were real good, but once you stopped them, they wouldn't start. They, something about them, what the, if you ever shut a Maul off, you couldn't get it started for a half hour. All that changed, of course, over the years.
And some of these were two-piston engines?
Yeah.
Opposed?
Yeah.
Pistons?
Yeah, that distance, that 12-horse distance was two cylinders opposed. And it weighed 89 pounds, just the business end of it.
So you needed two people?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember the first saw you used that could be handled by one person?
Yeah, there was, there's some people, when the Mauls come out, there's one man could handle that.
About how much did they weigh?
I think 70-some pounds. And they had a removable stinger that had a sprocket out there to start with. On the end of the bar. Of course, later they call it the beaver tail. They just went around the bar, well, like they do today. You know, there's no handle or anything on the bars anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it just runs around. They developed their chain where they would stay in the groove, you know, without the opposite, the other handle to keep it. There was no sprocket on the end anymore. It just run around the bar.
The slot in the bar.
Yeah.
Okay. Did some of these have a handle out at the end of the bar?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because that's what they call it, a two-man, you know. The guy that had the handlebar and the controls with the engine and all, and then the guy on the other end had the stinger end of it. He carried the head guy carried the big one, but the one on the stinger end, it wasn't near so heavy, but he's the one that had to go around and swap out the extra round side of the tree so he could get it done, and the guy with the motor, well, he had the good place to stand, you see.
Now, did you have to sharpen the saw blades
on
these too?
Oh, yeah.
Then, and you did that the same way. They had to be sharpened daily.
Yeah.
If you're working.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like the cross cuts, you sharpen them every night, and if you had some kind of trouble, you know, if the stinger end dropped in the dirt, lost his footing or something, why, you did some sharpening right in the middle of the day, because it got down on the rock before it stopped, you know. That don't make them cut very good.
I know, I've done it. Well, I hit nails or wire embedded in the wood.
Yeah.
Was that fairly common where you'd hit obstructions in the wood, in trees?
Well, that did happen some. Even bullets once in a while, but rarely. You know, it was something to talk about if you run into a bullet.
So, would you ever have a rifle or do some hunting when you were out on one of these jobs?
Did
you ever do any hunting when you were out on these jobs?
You bet. You had your own kind of meat. That was part of your groceries.
That was your groceries.
Yeah, part of that was your meat side of your groceries. That saved on the food bill.
Now, how would you, if you were up in high country, would you have to haul?
But of course, I never did work for the big outfits, you know, that had the railroads and so on, before the trucks and so on. That was before my time.
Now, were the railroads owned by the logging companies?
Yeah.
And these were like small railroad lines that they'd put in, and
yeah, that was before the trucks, you know, and the logging trucks. It was railroad. The logs were skidded to the railroads, and then the railroad people would load and haul them out on the rail. Well, out here, Palmer's, they had several branch railroads. You know, there was a crew either picking up or making a new railroad right away for more rail, you know, in different parts. Out in that Enterprise country, they had rails down about every ridge that went down towards the Grand Round, had a railroad in the bottom of it, and everything was skidded to that. The old East Oregon there in Enterprise, we grew up on the slope out north of Enterprise, and we could always tell, they had three trains, and we could tell one was called the Shea, and one was the three spot. I can't think of the other one now, it don't matter. But that log for the East Oregon, the big old mill that there was at Enterprise it shut down long before I was even in high school. But my grandfather worked there in that mill around 1922. It was all done by hand then days.
Was it pretty common for a family, father, son, grandfather, to all do this kind of work?
Yeah.
So it was kind of passed on through family.
Yeah, it was, all the wages in the woods would beat any farm labor and so on. It was all horse and buggy days, horse days, you know. But the law, I think there was more money in logging than there was farming. That's the way it was, I think, those days. That's where the payroll was in the woods.
Was it very common for people to be injured or killed in logging then?
Oh. I don't remember any more than today, you know. I never was around anybody that ever got killed or anything. But I don't remember that part of it, you know, when I was a kid.
So people were pretty careful.
Oh, yeah, I think so. But I just... I never... thinking about that, I had a man killed right out here on the Looking Glass on my crew. And the log was had already loaded the log, and this guy was a real good worker, and when he threw the wrapper over there and then went around to pull it down, he pulled the brow log off on him, killed him. Young guy. That was really tough to take. Had a wife and little baby. Just 1 second in the wrong place and died right there.
Do you remember the family name?
At this moment, I can't.
What happened to his family? Do you know that? What happened with his family? Was he from a logging family, like other people, or some others?
I don't really know. He was just a young guy, married and had a baby, a good worker, but he was green to the woods. But he pulled that. Binder chain he threw over, when he pulled on it, it wasn't sitting there good enough, and he pulled that log off the top load there onto him. Just takes a split second. Life is all over with. He was a good guy too. Never did quite get over that.
The back at this time, there were a number of mills around where you could take your logs. You took yours over to Wallawa?
No, we logged for Reed right here.
Oh, here in Elgin.
On the Minum, yeah. Yeah, we was we worked for Reed for several years. But that the railroads, there never was any railroads on the Minum, or that is the upper Minum, you know, truck.
Now, early on, when you first started, were you using, were there trucks around here to haul the logs out finally?
Well, we had our own. We had one truck. And then we hired some. I know George Krauser had his own truck there for a while. You may even know his son that has the insurance business down there.
Bob Krauser? Yeah.
Yeah, it was his dad. He had his own truck that he hauled on the mine. I mean, we had one truck. To start with, that's all the trucks we had, were just the two, I think.
Now, you used the term before, Gippo?
Yeah.
That was the kind of like what your company was?
Yeah, Gippo. I guess the word means piecework.
Piecework, okay.
You get paid by the piece, not the hour. I think it's what Gippo means. I don't know where it comes from.
Well, that was the way you did it, though. You just got paid by...
You cut, like the haulers, they cut by the thousand, not by the hour. So they got paid just how much they did. It was a fair way to do it rather than hourly wage.
And then the company, or your company, when you had your own, you got paid by the mill per board foot.
Yeah. Got so much for delivered logs. It was their timber, but we got paid. So much a thousand delivered in. Mill.
Now, if you worked for a private landowner, how would that arrangement be set up? How would...
Well, if we got, and we did some of that too, when we'd be shut down in the spring on the mine, but we take some timber off of private ground, like farmers that have a patch of timber, want to sell it, or we'd log for them, or else pay them for their logs and get what we could out of it. But this was just kind of a spring breakup thing when the main company was down.
What parts of the year would you log, and when couldn't you log?
You couldn't log in the spring breakup when the moisture, the frost was going out of the roads and so on, when it wouldn't hold up the logging trucks. You know, you just had to go down like February, March, April, maybe. Everything was just mud, you know.
So like a dry spring would be good. You could get started.
Yeah.
Early.
Yeah.
Could you log in the winter time?
Oh yeah. Yeah. That a lot of good points for logging in the wintertime. For instance, if you had snow on the ground, those logs pulled easier, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when the roads were froze, they hauled a lot easier rather than the mud, you know. But when spring break come along, why? Then that put everything down in the woods. You know, you couldn't. You had to haul on the frost, or you couldn't haul. You this wire down, you know.
When, you know, you also did some catlogging with your brother.
Oh, yeah.
You had a cat as well.
Yeah.
How many different cats did you have for, with your company?
Well, for years we just had the one, seven, no, 3T, seven. But that's all we had on the mine there for, well, it seems like several years, but just, you know, with 3T7. And we did outside dirt work in the spring breakup when you couldn't log. In fact, one year we went clear up the mine and extended the airstrip on Red's Horse Ranch. And there is some pictures of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have your pictures here today.
Yeah. So, just like every spring, you know, the roads go out. And in fact, that's why they stockpile so much in the mills right now, you know, is to cover them over the spring breakup period, because all the roads get muddy. Frost is out, and this year didn't have any frost, you know. This has been an outstanding year for that, but what will happen without any moisture and so on, and I hope we have some timber left, you know. Hope the fire don't get them.
Were there fire problems like that when you had a really dry winter?
You know, I don't ever remember winter like this.
Really?
No.
How often did you run into fire problems?
Oh, ever fall. Ever. Seemed like ever hunting season. I don't know whether to blame the hunters or the time of year or what, but it seemed like that's when we were logging way out on the hoodoo. The lightning set that whole country afire, like 65 fires in our area.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them we got out right away and some of them we never did get out.
So would you get involved with the firefighting too?
Oh yeah. You felt responsible for two ways, you know. It's you're there. So you're the one that's got to get to that fire, if you possibly can, you know, because you're already there in the area, and it's also burning up what you're making a living with.
They didn't do any kind of salvage logging for fires then, did they? Or
no. I don't think we ever did salvage log a burn. I don't remember.
Back to the catlogging. What kind of equipment and skills did you need to do that kind of logging?
Well, first of all, you needed a winch on the back of the cat, you know, so you could reach back wherever and pull your logs in. And of course, your cat can't go every place. So that's where the horses come in those days, you know. But we did it ever. Sometimes we'd bunch for the cat with the horses, you know, like a steep, rugged ridge where they'd pull the timber and the horse logger would bunch them for the cat. So he could just come up the trail and hook onto a whole bunch of them and take them back, you know. No. Teamsters would bunch them for the cats off of the steeper ground and brushier places and so on. So you kind of worked a combination of delivery there, you know.
Okay. How would you attach the logs to the cat? Were they in choke chains or?
Yeah, we used the choker.
Chokers.
Roosevelt chokers, yeah.
How about keeping the cat? Did you have to have a mechanic with you or somebody with some good mechanical knowledge to keep the cat going?
Service your own rigs, but of course you're doing a pretty rough job, and when you broke down, well, you, if it was track troubles or something like that, well, you generally figured out yourself if you broke a link in your track and so on, but motor trouble and so on, you generally had to bring a mechanic in, but he never had much of that. You overhauled of a spring when it was down, and they were pretty dependable, really.
Did any other company make cats other than Caterpillar?
Oh, yeah, International.
International?
Yeah. I had an 018. And I had 2 9s. I had a D9 International with a grapple.
What's a grapple?
Forklift.
Oh, to grab.
Grapple over. I loaded logs with that, and I had two of them, and sometimes the logs were big, well, we used them both to get the big log on the truck. We get on each end of it. Those nines were pretty good little cats, and I had an old 18 that was wore out. It was good on the trails and so on. My brother was a cat logger, a Caterpillar logger, and I was an International tractor. But they all break down. Doing pretty good till that strike hit Palau, you know, and it shut us down every place.
And that mill shut down. That mill shut down entirely.
Oh yeah, when you know the union struck in Palau, and that's we just had those. Well, you've got the pictures, I guess, of the looking glass mill.
Mm-hmm.
You see, they built that brand new, and they had whorls of timber back there, and before that they were we hauled down to the track, and they shipped, loaded them on the cars and shipped them to Palau. Then eventually Bates built that brand new mill and looking glass. Everything was going great till that rabble rouser Palau decided that they would press J. Herbert into more money, and everybody was doing great. He said, if you strike, I'll shut her down, and that's what he did.
Now, there was a mill in Elgin at that time?
Oh, yeah.
Did they pick up some of the slack, taking logs in,
no.
Or? what happened with them.
You know, truthfully, I don't know, because I left.
Oh, you left the area. Okay. How many other mills were there around the time that Bates quit?
You know, I don't really know. I know Eckstein had a good mill right over here where it's nothing but a built up area over here right now. And Spool had the old right in there. I went to Colorado with Eckstein, and my brother went to Montana with his outfit, and I just kind of lost out there in Elgin. I don't know what all happened. But I,
okay. Was there a mill at Minum at
yeah.
the juncture when you were working?
Yeah, I never did log for them.
You didn't log for them?
No.
Was it a good-sized mill?
No, not as today's goes. It was a... I think it was just a circle mill. I don't think it was even a bandsaw mill. Myron Fleischer had that. And there was a mill before that I didn't know anything about. That's
at the same place?
Yeah. And that was a pretty big mill, I guess, but it was before my time. And when they, you see, they'd go up to Minum and they'd cold deck with the logs during the winter time. And then when the high water come, they would float the Minum down to Minum. The logs down to Minum. And I think it was like 1922. This is all just history story because I wasn't around. Broke the whatever you call it, the chain things that holds the decks when the high water hit. And all those logs come down, it broke the chain, and they lost their logs. And even picked up some of them in Lewiston. And that was, they tell me that was like in 1922. And then later, Fleischer built a mill, smaller deal, and he had a mill there for several years, Myron Fleischer.
Where did the logs that ruined the mill, where did they come from?
Well, the Minum.
In the Minum
that
River.
That was way back before the cab days. That was all horse logging. And they decked them along the river and waited for the high water in the spring to float them down the Minum. Well, this one year something happened and broke the boom and lost all their logs. Broke the company and
they went downriver and ruined the mill?
Yeah, they lost the winter's supply of logs. And I don't know the details because it was before my time, you know. I was born in 21, but they say that was in 20 or 22, I forgot, when that happened. I've heard a lot of stories of it and knew some guys that worked at it.
Was anybody hurt?
I don't remember.
Okay. Okay. Now, when you did cataloging, was this mostly the men up in the mountains again? Or did women come up and help and do things?
No, there weren't many women, only in camp. you know, we had a cookhouse at one time back on the mine up there. And we had a bunkhouse and had a barn for our teams.
Was this at the horse ranch?
No.
Another one.
It was just up on, you go right up that canyon, right at Minum, mm-hmm. the real estate road, go back in up there, it flattens out. And we had a cookhouse on the
So, were you married at this time?
No, I wasn't. I got out of the Army and we busted up while I was in the Army. I got out in 45 and then I was single for a while.
What did men do if they were working like that, if they were married? Did they
just
see their wives between jobs?
Yeah, just go home of a weekend. And of course, when we had the cookhouse, where there was a couple of the guys' wives did the cooking. And so we had a kind of a boarding house there for ones who didn't want to batch it out. So they'd eat at the cookhouse. But there was other guys that just camped and batched rather than eat at the cookhouse. You have to have a kind of a combination, you know.
How'd you spend, did you have any leisure time when you just didn't have things to do? Or were you working most of the time?
When you was out there, you was working. You know, if we'd go out, like I married a girl that had a ranch out on in the Leap Country where I'd go home for a weekend. But there for a while, when I first got out of the Army, I lost the first wife while I was in the Army, so I didn't have anybody there for a while. But there was guys' wives that moved out there and had a cookhouse. Whoever wanted to batch there, some of them did, and some of them did their own batching, you know.